Hello and welcome back to Millennial. I'm now here with Horace. This is Horace's second time on Millennial. He was here 2 years ago. So welcome back, Horace.
Hello, Woz. Hello, everyone. Yeah, thanks for having me back on. It's an honour. Yeah, so yeah, looking forward to this.
Excellent. And we're going to talk about the FTX scandal. Now, something I'd like to do with Millennial, perhaps do it more in future, is have an episode each year have episodes each year that go into the stories that have happened that year and really describe it and explain it for people who might not understand what happened. As much as discussing it, we'll actually just explain what happened. And one thing that's baffling to me is the world of finance and economics. I don't really understand it, and it's something I'm just not optimized for understanding. And so I didn't understand the FTX scandal. I don't really know what happened. It seems to have been some kind of money laundering or Ponzi scheme to benefit the Democrat Party in America. But either way, Horace does understand it, and he's going to explain it to us. And that's going to be the function and purpose of this stream. So, Horace, thank you for agreeing to do this. Because I imagine that quite a lot of people will be like me, and they'll be sort of baffled by this scandal that just happened and is ongoing, indeed, because the main guy in it has just been arrested in the Bahamas. So it's an interesting thing. So what would you say, just off the bat, to summarize this so that everyone knows broadly what we're talking about? What would you say the FTX scandal is?
It's something that you can't quite describe all in one sentence at the moment because, well, he kind of, by getting arrested the other day, he kind of threw out the whole narrative. I was kind of expecting to spend half of this stream just talking about theories about why he's not been arrested, but now he has, which has ruined everything. But it looks, we'll come to this, you know, the seriousness of the charges, but it looks very serious. It looks like he's going to go to prison for a long time. That, I mean, I was not expecting that. It looked like he was, weirdly, it looked like he was going to get away with it, except the news story didn't die down, which, you know, if the media and other friends of his wanted it to go away, it probably would have. What I suspect is happening is some sort of power wrangle between different factions. I think that applies to a lot of things that we're seeing in the world now, in Britain as well. And, Liz Truss getting overthrown and Sunak and stuff. There's all these different power factions going on. I could go into that at the end. But I don't know who's in charge. I really don't know who's in charge.
Yeah, I mean, one way that of looking at it that it might explain it or it might not is that when a scandal is high profile enough that it can't be buried, then they feel that just realistically, for the sake of optics and whatever, they have to do something. And there has to be a fall guy. There has to be someone who can take the rap for the whole thing. And, in the case of, you've had obviously Epstein, then Ghislaine Maxwell, and now this with Sam Bankman-Fried, who seems to be, and he has been central in, because I'm sure that there must be loads of people involved in this, and yet it's always been his image, and the girl, the Ellison, I think Caroline Ellison girl, so this strange sort of Jewish pixie girl thing that weird, but most
the wood nymph.
Yes, exactly. But mostly it's been this guy. And I suspect, I mean, we'll go into this, but it feels on the face of it, it feels like that he has been sort of identified as an adequate fall guy. So we'll put him out front and center, make his image known to everyone, and then we'll fuck him up. And then that will be just as sad. I mean, what would you say about that?
I'm not sure if the evidence actually bears that out. I've spent a lot of time in the last week looking over everything I can find about this. And it's really hard to say whether this was intended to happen or not. I lean towards it wasn't. I lean towards this being a genuine fuck up, largely on his part and, you know, the other executives of FTX. and animator research, which, yeah, we'll go into the difference between those in a minute. But in terms of theorizing about what happened, I mean, should we go into more detail on that after we've sort of explained
what it was? Probably a good idea to, yeah, that sounds sensible.
The short answer to that is it's really hard to know whether this was intended to happen, but I have considered that in the sort of notes that I've made. So,
okay.
So we'll come to that in due course, right? But Bankman-Fried himself, I mean, do you want me to just start in about him?
This is the main character in it, so we might as well paint the picture. And it's a distinctive picture. Tell us about Sam Bankman-Fried.
Yeah, I mean, for someone involved with such enormous amounts of money, he's young. He's only just 30. He turned 30 this year. He's lived quite a life for someone so young. His background is, I mean, he's like upper middle class Jewish academic parents. Seems very well connected. I mean, he's through Caroline Ellison, who was a friend of his from earlier in his 20s, and then his girlfriend. He's connected to Gary Gensler, who is the head of the Securities and Exchange Commission. That's one of the federal bodies that oversees things like this, and which is now charging him. I thought, until the other day, I thought that that connection was keeping him out of jail, but it's not. So things keep changing. So you've seen pictures of him. Yeah, he's not a guy who works out. You can tell that he's a vegan. He's got the moves of a vegan, I think, of a someone who doesn't eat very well and doesn't lift. But he's involved with all sorts of left wing causes since he was young, including especially this effective altruism thing. Had you heard of effective altruism? Have you heard of that before?
No, I had never heard of it. In the same way that I hadn't heard of spirit cooking before that became
I still don't really know what that is. What is spirit
cooking? I don't know either. Yeah, I just know that it's something a bit strange.
It's something related to Pizzagate, wasn't it, I think?
Yeah, exactly. And that woman, I can't remember her name now.
The Balkan named woman, yeah.
Tell us about effective altruism, because this probably, I'm not sure how relevant this is to the overall thing, but it is an interesting part of it anyway.
Yeah, I first heard of it when I used to listen to Sam Harris's podcast, but I think this was about 5 years ago. He had on a guest called William McCaskill, who sounded unhealthy. He was always like kind of swallowing, like he had like a problem with, I don't know, like, but he's another one who's like a vegan, a feminist, very left wing. And he started off this thing called effective altruism. There's the Center for Effective Altruism, and it's a broader cause. There's other organizations as part of it. He met Sam Bankman-Fried before Bankman-Fried got into trading, before he became a trader at all, which was sort of 6 or 7 years ago, 7 or 8 years ago. And he actually has got a remarkably large part in this. I noticed also that Sam Bankman-Fried was also a guest on Sam Harris's podcast as well. So I don't know. I mean, Sam Harris is a fucking shady character, like increasingly shady character, you know, like his extreme Trump derangement syndrome and stuff. But he's not got any direct connection to this other than he connects those two people. But yeah, effective altruism is a variant of utilitarianism, McCaskill, when he was on this podcast, he was saying you should basically give up all the money that you don't need to live. Like, you could have shelter and food and water and not much else. You should give up all of it to poorer people. So it's like really like strongly redistributive, like egalitarianism, basically. And SBF was converted to that as a young man, fresh out of uni. And it was actually McCaskill, the leader of this movement, who convinced him to get into trading, which is surprising because obviously you don't really associate like trading, you know, like trying to make as much money as possible with this left wing. But like SBF says, you know, I thought getting into trading was the best way I could make as much money as possible to give away. Now, since all this scandal's broken down, I've thought, yeah, bullshit. You know, like, I mean, it always seemed slightly dubious. However, the more I read about it, the more I think actually you may have been sincere about this. It's a really hard story to figure out. He's part of this movement anyway. And when he set up his firm, which I'll come on to in a minute, when he set up Alameda Research, all the first sort of few dozen people he recruited were all from this effective altruism movement. It's as though it's a kind of like the Moonies or something. It's sort of like a sort of global cult. But it's not, I mean, yeah, it's strange. Like, it's a curious thing that I just found out today. But yeah, his motives, right? So, I mean, you know a little bit about the crypto world, right? In the sense that you know that, like, you've used cryptos a bit, haven't you? And,
yes, yes.
So, like, Bitcoin specifically was obviously the first one, and that was in, you know, that began in 2009. It has a somewhat implicitly sort of anarchistic libertarian ethos about it, in that it's about doing exactly what the central bankers don't want. And it's not, you know, it's not conducive to the wishes of government at all, because Bitcoin is intended to be hard money. And it is, you know, it's been in operation now for 13 years, and it is the hardest money that there's ever been. I mean, it's like gold is considered, sorry, by hard money, I mean, it can't be inflated at the diktat of the government, right, or the diktat of the central bank. So the dollar is soft money, right? So gold is hard, but not the hardest, because you can mine more gold, obviously. And when we get to asteroid mining and stuff, there'll be a lot of gold, you know. But Bitcoin, you literally cannot ever create more than 21 million. And effectively, the supply of it decreases because people lose their Bitcoins and stuff. So
indeed, there are some famous stories about people losing like a crypto wallet USB thing or a hard drive, and you know, it's unimaginable amounts of wealth that they're losing,
and increasing amounts. Like, the torment of that must grow as well. There's this one guy who threw out a computer that he's convinced is in a landfill site, and he's been trying for years. I mean, like 7 or 8 years to try and find it. It must be rotted or corrupted, like, by now. But he says, because it's worth hundreds of millions, if he can find it, he's been like paying to like go digging through.
Yes, it's just unbelievable.
Yeah. So Bitcoin has its sort of implicitly anarchistic ethos that, like, it's not conducive to government. Really, it obviously appeals to libertarians and so on. And I think SBF doesn't give a shit about any of that stuff. And, like, obviously this world of crypto, where there's a lot of fast money to be made, it attracts all sorts of people who've got no idea about how it originated and stuff. And SBF, to me, is one of those. He does not care about the freedom aspect of it, the, you know, the be your own bank aspect of it. That's nothing. To him, it's just, he saw the crypto world. He first found out about it about 5 years ago. He was just, this is where the fast money is, right? This is where you make. And he was already a wizard trader. He was already, you know, like the best at his firm and stuff, just dazzling everyone. So he just thought, yeah, he's going to move into the crypto world, and that's how he's going to make the money that ostensibly he's going to give away. Whether he's really sincere about that or not, we don't know. But but yeah, so he founded Alameda Research after he'd been at another trading firm, James Street Capital. And he founded this in November 2017. And it's a quant fund, meaning it's just like the trading decisions are made purely based on maths and just observing the motion of numbers and values and stuff. There's no fundamental analysis of, you know, what's a good business, what's good cash flow. It's not, you know, nothing like that. It's just, what do the numbers say? You know, what are the odds? What are the probabilities? Right. And it's a hedge fund, and a hedge fund is an investment fund where you can hedge against your own positions. So a lot of funds are prohibited from doing that because it brings in extra risks. But yeah, like, hedge funds is sort of an aggressive trading fund. It's like, you know, we can use almost any instrument and almost any strategy. So, and it suits someone like him who is just, you know, he sits in front of a screen and he gets what he's looking at. He's a whiz with the numbers. He's a maths savant sort of thing. The name Alameda Research, although it's a hedge fund, is called Research. That, he has said himself, that is just to deceive people about what it is, just to make it sound innocuous, when in fact it is like a finance thing. And it's, you know, so like that's one of the early signs that this guy just deceives people routinely. But nobody seems to be bothered by that.
But you also think that he was deceiving people in a sort of Robin Hood sense, that he was trying to make loads and loads of money so as to give it to redistribute it to the poor.
Yeah, although, I mean, I've read that as soon as he founded Alameda and it started making money, which was almost as soon as it was founded, he did give away half of the profits, like, continually. So it's like, I mean, I don't know, I mean... if that's true, though, that means that his fund could have been worth maybe like twice or more as much as it was. And it already, I mean, I'm jumping ahead a bit here, but it already had an incredibly rapid growth. Amazing. Like, I mean, it. Right, so his first, the first moves they made were just with, you know, tens of thousands of pounds, dollars. And it was doing sort of, so Bitcoin was, for complicated reasons of sort of capital controls between different countries and stuff, was worth more in South Korea and at one point Japan than anywhere else in the world. And if you could get money across the borders and get past all those barriers that the government's put in place, you could arbitrage that, which basically means a trade where you put large amounts of money into something, but you're not afraid to risk it because it's extremely low risk, right? So all you had to do was just get through the difficulties. It was low risk, but just high difficulty. He got through all those difficulties and he started making a fortune. And then he managed to, because he was showing that he was making huge amounts of money, he managed to borrow sort of next level money, like tens of millions rather than tens of thousands. And he started, growing this Alameda Research into like, a thing that by last year was worth nearly $30 billion, I think. This is from almost nothing in the space of 3.5 years. It's incredible growth. Amazing. He became obviously one of the richest men in the world by last year.
Mm.
And... it is, I mean, that is possible. I'm not necessarily saying there was anything dodgy there. It's just remarkable. I mean, in crypto, you can make literally hundreds of times your money with certain tokens. If you're using leverage as well, you could be maybe talking about tens of thousands of times your original investment. Although, I mean... Yeah, I mean, the tokens where you make those huge gains, though, it would be mad to use leverage. But I think he did. I think he did make these incredibly high-risk moves. And I think what's happened is it has worked for a few years, and he's probably become overconfident. But anyway, so Alameda Research had this stellar growth. And so he ceased to be the CEO of it late last year, and Caroline Ellison became the co-CEO with another guy called Sam Trabucco, who then stepped down this year. She became a sole CEO in August this year. So that becomes a factor later on. But so as Alameda was doing really well, in the midst of that, he decided to also found this crypto exchange, right? So Alameda's a trading hedge fund, basically. FTX is an exchange. It's where people can go. They can bring either their dollars, their pounds, or whatever, or their Bitcoin, or their Ethereum, or other tokens, and they can trade them all. And FTX was set up basically to have the sort of the regulatory compliance of Coinbase. So Coinbase is one of the oldest exchanges. Their strategy is just to please the regulators, because that way, the more regulatory compliance you show, the more likely the big money is to come in, right? You're talking like sovereign wealth funds, like, you know, national investment funds. You're talking pension funds, which, you know, combined are in the tens of trillions, hundreds of trillions of dollars. The big money will come in once they're confident, well, of what they're investing in, but also
you're a safe bet.
Yeah. So Binance was never that. Binance is much more sketchy. But on Binance, you can do more things, right? So Binance is founded by a guy called Changpeng Zhao, who's a big figure in this story in a little while. He's born in China, grew up in Canada. His exchange is... No one really knows where Binance is based. So there's all these sketchy elements about Binance. But Binance is the biggest exchange, right? Coinbase is the one that's most embedded in legal terms and regulatory terms, and it's got the most friends in politics and so on. FTX was trying to combine the benefit of both, the ability to do all these sophisticated derivative trading, but still have the regulatory big tick sort of thing, you know, so that you could get the big money in and you could do all sorts with it. And that's what he was aiming for. And it seems to have worked very well until quite recently. And it became the second biggest exchange in the world. Binance is number one. As you can imagine, these two became, there's some friction developed between them, and that's partly what leads to the current kerfuffle. One thing about both of those, Binance and FTX, that doesn't apply to Coinbase is that they have their own token. Now, this again is part of why FTX and Alameda collapsed. much of SBF's net worth was from his ownership of Alameda, but Alameda, a lot of their net worth was holding this FTT token, which was FTX's token, right? So that token serves all sorts of purposes. I don't want to go too much into detail, but it's something that facilitates the exchange. But it's also something that basically helps make the founder get rich, because you launch this token at pennies, but people begin to buy it because it's associated with this growing successful exchange, and it just grows and grows in value. So it starts off worth a few cents, becomes worth, $10, $20 per token. You hold, you as Sam Bankman-Fried, you hold maybe 10 or 20 or 30% of the whole supply. As that grows, you have this kind of, some people call it like hamster wheel model, because it is exceedingly volatile, right? Like basically you look very rich, but also it can collapse very quickly. And that's what happened about 6 weeks ago. So we'll come to why. The other great vulnerability is that, right, if you think about it, all these exchanges have got their own tokens. So Binance has got its own, KuCoin has got its own, FTX has got its own, but they've no interest in trading each other's tokens, because obviously that's their competitor's token. So they're actually very illiquid. There's only one or two places for most of these where you can buy or sell these tokens. If, of course, as happened, FTX exchange runs into problems, there's no liquidity for FTT token. It just, there's nowhere to buy and sell it. Or basically nobody's, there's no market for it.
It's useful within FTX itself. But outside of that, it's really useless.
Yes, and there's nowhere else where it's, there's bids and offers for it. It's just it suddenly goes into freefall if there's a problem. And I used to hold some FTT. It looked so strong. Everything seemed to be on the up and up. I sold out earlier in the year because I just sold out all my altcoins. But I thought that was one of the strongest. They really created the impression of just steadily growing success, and I dodged that bullet out of luck, really. There were things that foreshadowed this scandal. There were some warning signs for those with eyes to see, and there were some people who warned about it, but I didn't see them. The sheer sort of opacity of how SBF made his fortune so rapidly and so huge, That always raises questions. I mean, the same could be said of various other people. Like, it was said most of all of him. A lot of people were saying all along, how did he get so rich? I mean, he seems clever. He's done that arbitrage move that he did with the, career and stuff. That was clever, but still, how does that get him into the tens of billions, So that people should have been asking more questions about that. The other thing was that there was an obvious growing hostility between him and Changpeng Zhao. I'll call him CZ. That's what everyone calls him. Obviously, it's America. It should be CZ. But yeah, Changpeng Zhao. There was a growing hostility and sort of coldness and friction between them, and certainly, especially in the weeks leading up to the collapse of FTX. So also, Caroline Ellison should not have become anywhere near as senior as she did. She was not fit to be chief executive of Alameda Research, which obviously, as I say, was managing tens of billions. She was nowhere near qualified for that. She'd never run anything. She'd just been a low-level trader.
Now, this is relevant because this is part of the skepticism that people feel about this whole story, is how were a bunch of youngsters, and, to me, someone in their 20s is a youngster. Yeah. Sorry, I know it seems condescending, but I don't mean it that way. How the hell were a bunch of youngsters in charge of so much money? And then the implication is, well, they were being financed to do this. They were being left alone to do. They were being allowed to do this. And higher powers were using them, basically. Now, I mean, I don't know. Is that true?
Yet to find any evidence of that. I mean, that would make sense of a lot of things, but I've not found any evidence of that. And the thing is, like, FTX and Alameda are in the hands of bankruptcy administrators now. So you would think, if that is the case, if there is like unexplained funding either flowing into Alameda or some other, in some other way that benefits SBF, you'd think that that, you know, if not now, like in over the next year, that will become clear. But so far, I've not found I think I'm inclined to say that they did make their money legitimately, but with, I say that very tentatively, like legitimately in the most grasping and aggressive sense, you know, within the way that they got so rich is actually not the thing that they've done wrong, as far as I can tell. What they've done wrong is actually since they became so massive. So we'll come to that, like the charges that have been laid against them. But Edison is just like a dweeby looking little thing. Like, they're all like polyamorous as well. There's like, he's referred to his polycule. Have you ever heard this word before?
No, I've never heard that word ever.
Apparently that refers to like a polyamorous collective, like all the people who are, you know, in a relationship collectively together. They could be like 5, 7, 10, 12, 20 people. They were in a polycule of like 10 people or something, him, her, and a bunch of others.
Wonderful. I mean, it's, God almighty.
Such beautiful people as well. Like,
yeah, exactly. I mean, it doesn't bear thinking about, really.
But you can't imagine that being good for business, right?
No, indeed. I mean, there was a thing about the cliche about the hippie communes is that they fell apart because of the free love stuff. Because it led to immense amounts of jealousy and rivalry and resentment between the men. Because every guy wanted, you know, to have his woman, and didn't want her sleeping with other guys for obvious evolutionary reasons.
Yep.
So it's bizarre that this would ever seem like a good idea. I mean, it did to those people in the 60s and 70s. So I guess we can understand. I mean, basically, young men want free sex. So it's, you can understand them getting into it for that reason. It's just, well, look, there are young women here. Well, what do you expect me to do? But it is continually surprising that people do this stuff and then are surprised when it blows up.
Have you ever seen? Do you know about the Weather Underground or the Weathermen?
Oh, yes.
Have you, there's a documentary about that where they mention, and it's only a brief part of it, but they just mention about them, their, well, what was it, like smash monogamy campaign. And it's like obviously something they want to impose on the whole world eventually, like, you know, they're commies. Like, but they, you know, it's like, first we've got to cure ourselves of this reactionary idea of monogamy. And it was pretty much pressured and forced each other and like screamed at each other to all engage in, yeah, orgies, like constantly orgies, including like in one case when they were like zooming along on the motorway, they're like just all on the bottom of a van, like rolling around trying to hump each other and stuff. But like one of them says, I you know, we did that several times, and then after a while I saw a crab in someone's eyebrow and I thought, I'm not doing this anymore. But yeah, it leads to like just filth, obviously. I mean, like, oh, what do you expect? Like,
well, and there's the oh, what was his name? Tom Wolfe, essay, The Great Relearning, which I've brought up several times, where he talks about this, that the hippies rediscovered old diseases that hadn't been seen for centuries because nobody had lived in such squalor, sharing mattresses, even sharing toothbrushes, and of course the incredible amounts of sex and promiscuity. So it leads to all sorts of dysfunction.
Yeah, I mean, I can't imagine anyone is happy doing polyamory for longer than a novelty period. You know, like, you know, it might be exciting in a certain way for a little while, but it seems to me like you've got to be out of your goddamn mind to think that's going to be a good lifestyle. Right?
Yeah, and I mean, I wasn't sure whether to go into this aspect of it at all because, you know, it's not strictly relevant to what was going on. The rest of it. But it is interesting just as a sort of insight into the personalities involved here, because, I mean, you could say it's a Jewish thing that they're into smashing taboos and...
almost all the weathermen were Jewish, yeah.
Exactly. And maybe it was a similar thing here. And perhaps their own ethnocentrism guards them against the potential damage that this could do. You know, they're not going to fall out with each other and, you know, betray each other because... they're all in this thing together, so to speak. Well, literally. But, you know what I mean? Their ethnocentrism might save them from that. I don't know. I mean, I don't know if it would.
Well, it appears that it's not so far. I mean, they've started grassing each other up. Not enthusiastically, but like Caroline Ellison has, I mean, I'm jumping ahead a bit, but like she has revealed that what SBF denies about the mingling of user funds with trading funds, which is illegal, which is fraud. She's revealed that like all the top executives there did know about it, and SBF's been denying that. So they haven't got their story straight, and they're effectively betraying each other. Like he's now got an interest in grassing her up and stuff. He's tried to blame things on her. Like so they've gone from this, you know, this free love thing to now they're going to be enemies in court. They're probably going to be dragging each other down. So it's not worked, but yeah.
All right.
They may have thought that it would just work out. My impression, like, you know, to put one word over all of this, is that these people are somewhat crazy. Like I am conspiracy minded. I often, you know, more or less look for malevolence in and conspiracy in people, but I'm not so far finding it in this. I'm finding more wild, mad, like people who've lost their connection with nature. I'm seeing more of that. I mean, the effective altruism thing is pretty wacky to me. That's
definitely.
And that's the soft end of it, you know. Living in a sort of a love commune with people whilst doing business with them, whilst relying on them because you're carrying out criminal acts as well. You know, it's bonkers. It's not just evil, it's bonkers as well.
Like, indeed, it's like asking for trouble. I mean, if you're going to do something criminal, you want to know that you can absolutely trust the people you're working with, surely. You would, right. I mean, that would be common sense. Yeah. But something seems to have overridden that in these people. But I wonder if they saw what they were doing as criminal. How aware were they that?
I think as far as I can see so far, the crime comes into it, yeah, like relatively recently after they'd already got up into the tens of billions. I'm not sure that they did anything illegal before that. I think the illegal stuff happened this year and maybe last year when they were already big shots. I think, you know, from what I can see. Or that's how the story is being framed cleverly to stop us realizing, you know, it could be that. But from what the evidence shows me that, yeah, I think the crime came relatively recently. And before that, what they were doing was kind of wild and mad, but they hadn't actually done anything illegal. That's how it seems at the moment. But yeah, another thing about SBF is that he says he's like a lifelong depressive. Like his whole adult life, he's been sad and he's been on these, takes these anti-depression patches,
right?
So that's that's not good for you don't want a CEO who's depressive. Like, I mean,
he looks like the type.
Veganism will like contribute to that as well. I don't think it's good for you. It's not good for people.
No, we
evolved eating animal, you know, products to some extent. Like
I'm amazed when I hear what veganism actually means is like no butter, no milk, you know, all these
not
things
much that are nutrition.
You know, it just sounds awful, really. But I mean, yeah. How would, so is there a connect, see, this is what I, my impression of all this was that there was a heavy connection with the Democrat Party. Is that true or false? Or,
well, the clear connection that nobody denies is that he was a massive donor to the Democrat Party. He was the second biggest when Biden was elected, entirely fairly in a definitely real and fair election, with the most popular president of all time.
Incredible. Miracle. What a hero.
Oh, he is. I mean, he's inspiring. It's change we can believe in. but yeah, he was the second biggest donor after George Soros. Great roll call of guys there. And he was increasing his... So this year, obviously, they had congressional elections and governor elections and stuff. What do you call it? Midterms. He became a bigger donor. He started donating... I think he donated the best part of $40 million this year, which to him was obviously quite small. But he said over the next 2 years, by, you know, obviously the next presidential election, he was going to donate $100 million plus, and he said maybe up to $1 billion. I mean, that is enormous. Like, George Soros doesn't donate amounts like that, and George Soros spends a hell of a lot. but I don't think he spends amounts like that. So, yeah, he was becoming a major factor for the Democrat Party, and obviously he was becoming very popular. There's, you know, Maxine Waters, the sort of the American Diane Abbott.
Yeah.
She wrote a tweet to SBF about a week or so ago, just kind of like politely asking him to appear in front of Congress. Like, anyone else gets a summons, you know, he gets demands, like, gets insulted along the way and stuff. Like, and there's pictures of her, like, blowing kisses to him and stuff. Like, he bought a lot of politicians, basically.
And this is a guy who's still in his 20s.
Yeah, and so...
Incredible.
Yeah. Yeah, and, like, huge money. And so, like, American, like, campaign financing and stuff is a world that I don't understand very well, but I think there's huge scope for... like laundering and embezzlement, like I don't know, for like dirty, like donations that are really just bribery. I think there's a lot of scope for that. So he, but also anyone else involved in donating to politics in America, could be doing all sorts and just masking it, because you have these what they call public packs, you know, like super PACs and whatever. I can't remember what that stands for, but it's like it's an organization that channels money from rich people to this, or you know, to this politician or to that campaign, and he obviously was involved in several of those. Though, I mean, they probably can be used to mask all sorts of things. I mean, like, what is it? The thing that I think should be looked into is, yeah, his philanthropy in general, right? So you know, you have stuff like the Clinton Foundation. People should be looking, like, because, and that is accused of like people trafficking and all sorts. I don't know what the truth of it is, but it's like a philanthropic organization, like the Open Society Foundation, right? George Soros' thing. It's like, it's, yeah, people call it philanthropy. You know, it sounds like giving to good causes and stuff, but it's also to shape the world according to your desires.
It's sort of social world engineering. It's not far more than philanthropy. It's, I'm giving the money to this thing so that it will do the thing I want.
Yeah,
effectively.
So just taking the Open Society Foundation for one example, right? That is used for, among other many, many other things, that's used for color revolutions, right? Like the Rose Revolution, the Orange Revolution, you know, for like overthrowing governments in Ukraine. That's been a massive factor in Ukraine. So, I mean, that comes under the title of philanthropy. I think of all things that Sam Bankman-Fried's done, apart from all these criminal charges, people should be tearing open everything he's donated to. And just looking into, just seeing what connections are there. I'm sure you'll find some filth. One other interesting thing is that he was a big donor to things concerned with pandemic prevention. And that seems to be since, early 2020, which is curious. Like, his younger brother founded an organization. His younger brother's called Gabriel. He founded some organization, I can't remember the name of it, but it was like a pack, like... which is like a political action committee. That's what it stands for. But concerned with pandemic prevention. So it's like, is that something to do with just bribery to force vaccines a bit? God knows. Like, there's all sorts of questions about that. But he had some particular interest in that.
I would imagine that after 2020, they realized that lots of people with money to spare, to invest, probably realized that there's a huge, well, it's a lucrative area. I mean, Bill Gates proved that.
Right. Yeah, so there's all sorts of money to be made. I mean, yeah, even if you're just selling masks, some people made a fortune just out of selling masks or hand wash or, yeah, let alone Pfizer, let alone AstraZeneca. Yeah, I mean, Big Pharma, I mean, if you're on the same side as Big Pharma, you're probably a scumbag, aren't you? I think he was. Yeah. I mean, it's still a commonplace in American politics that the vaccines like prevent the spread of the virus, which they just don't. It's just not true. Like, but I heard, right, so there's another guy connected with all this called Kevin O'Leary. I heard him saying that like 2 days ago. The vaccines work to stop the spread of the virus. It's not true. That's not true. But that's still like commonly said in mainstream media.
I think we're at Emperor's New Clothes territory at this point with the vaccine. No one can afford to, there's just so much invested in it, and not just financially, that nobody can afford to admit the obvious truth that everyone at some level knows, must realize. I mean, I'm sure even, you know, normies realize at this point there was something creaky going on.
I mean, there's some renegade voices. I've watched Jimmy Dore. He's like my favourite leftist. I mean, he still talks a lot of leftist crap all the time, but he does say some good things. And he just says quite openly on his fairly big YouTube channel, like, no, this is all bullshit. Like, look, this is not true. So there are people calling it out, but yeah, like, it's still mainstream talking point that, yeah, the vaccines stop the spread. But as for the question of SPF and the Democrats, I would note that it's emerged recently that he also donated to the Republicans. We don't know how much, probably less. But he says that he did it by dark means as well, like untraceable means. why? I don't know. Like, I guess because that would look bad to his Democrat friends or something. But yeah, I mean, it's a common thing. Like, Goldman Sachs notoriously do that every election. They donate to every presidential candidate who's got any chance. I don't know if they donated to Trump, actually. But yeah, they famously do that. When Obama won, they'd already donated to him and McCain and, you know. He donates to the Republicans. And his partner, one of the senior execs at FTX, Ryan Salami, also was donating to the Republicans. So I think partly his interest in doing that might be just to get... it might be Never Trump Republicans. In fact, some of them definitely are. Some of the Republicans listed that he's donated to, yeah, they're like anti-Trump guys. So they're still basically servants of Zog in that way and stuff. So it's all helpful to him. Like, it's just, you know, buy as many politicians as you can, really.
Yes.
and also, as a bipartisan issue, with, like, crypto regulation has been mooted for a long time. It's still not happened in America. There's still, like, no clarity on what regulatory status crypto has, even though it's, like, more than 10 years old now. Right, so this is something I was going to come to. Like, he is someone, probably more than anyone else, he has been in Congress lobbying hard for regulations in the crypto world that ostensibly it's like it's good for business, like good for all of us because it will bring that big money in, like I was talking about earlier. But the general impression, and from what I've seen, I agree that the regulations he was calling for would especially suit FTX and not really the industry as a whole. So he was just lobbying for his own interests and spending to make it happen. So that's probably a big part of his thing. But as for, I mean, I imagine you were alluding to, you know, is there something much more dirty vis-a-vis the Democrats, right? My answer is, unfortunately, I don't know. I've been looking all week to find, you know, the real filth and not found anything solid. So...
Right, okay. So that was a misconception, perhaps, that people had, that this was all... a way to fund the Democrat Party and especially in the 2020 election.
Well, it is that. Yeah, I mean, he did donate a hell of a lot in 2020, even more this year, and he was planning to donate a whole nother level up, you know, like, as I say, potentially up to $1 billion over the next 2 years. I mean, that is big, big donations, like very big.
Oh, yeah.
So that is totally true. Other people also suggested that there's a Ukraine Democrat connection. Because, right, the illusion, well, I think there's no evidence for this. The illusion was that he was using his platform for the Ukraine government or people like Zelensky or like gangster type figures to launder money through FTX. As far as I know, that's not true. What FTX did do was when the invasion happened in February, quite a few different people, not just FTX, said, yeah, well, like loads and loads of people donated to Ukraine and they needed a means to get the money there. FTX was an easy way to do that. You just put some crypto on there, you know, click a button, say send it to the Ukraine fund, and FTX sees that it gets to them and gets translated into the Ukrainian currency. So as far as I know, that was legit. I mean, I don't like it. You know, I don't think people should be sending money to Zelensky, but it's not going to help the Ukrainian people, I don't think. But I don't think that was anything illegal. So, yeah, it's been, you know, but people should look into it for sure. I mean, it should be investigated. You know, there may be something dodgy there. But yeah, like his the regulations that he was campaigning for really compound the idea that he's not in you know, he does not share the ethos of Bitcoin. I'd say Bitcoin specifically, this sort of anarchist ethos. He was never into that. He's all about making money, just maximizing profits. And he's not a friend to the crypto world, really.
Yeah, it sounds like a sort of cowboy, perhaps, with regard to the rest of the crypto world, because a lot of the crypto world is really idealists and people who want to divorce from the old fiat currency system and have something that's not what would be the word, that's not manipulatable, that's not that can't be controlled by nefarious actors, especially state actors. There's a heavy libertarian angle to it all.
Yep, yep. Which you hate, right? So you probably want to see it stamped out.
No, I'm not. I'm not at all. No.
I was listening to you talking to Pete Quinones the other day, and I've been listening to him quite a lot the last few months, and
I'm not libertarianism. And I don't want to get into a debate about this, but libertarianism annoys me.
Another day, though. I'll have you on Horace Yule one time. And,
okay. All right. Look, what annoys me is the naivety of libertarians. I know that there's a similar sort of corresponding naivety among people who are statists or monarchists or whatever. I realize that. But I also think that, you know, crypto is a good thing. I mean, Bitcoin is a good thing, precisely because it is not, because of this libertarian angle. You know, I'm not against anything like that, not at all.
I remember the first moment that Bitcoin was explained to me. I'd heard of it about a year before, but then 2013, there was a bit of a crypto Bitcoin mania in the summer, when it first started getting into the tens of dollars. Imagine that now. And then by the end of that year, it got to nearly $1,000. But somebody explained it to me. A good friend of mine just came home one day. I was living with him at the time, and he just explained it to me. And he said, the penny dropped in. I guess it was two pennies that dropped in my mind at the same time. It was that element of, like, basically, this is something that the central banks can't control. It's like a new kind of money that they can't stop. They can't stop you using it. They can't cut you off like PayPal can or anything like that. It's like this is a thing for us, you know. It's also a thing that criminals can use. Obviously, they always say that, but it's exciting in that sense. And obviously, the profit potential of it is enormous, because as the dollar just gets, you know, and the pound and that just get ruined, which of course, you know, we're seeing this now. Like, I mean, the value of our money is just melting. Obviously, Bitcoin. I mean, it's in a bear market price wise, but the long term track record of Bitcoin over the last 10 years is obviously infinitely better than that of any fiat currency. So the anarchist element and the profit element come at the same time.
Absolutely. And just on that note, if anyone does want to donate their Bitcoin to me, I'd be happy to accept that. You know, there are people who are losing interest in it, losing faith in it. So I'm happy to take it off your hands for you. I know that this is a sort of common joke that's said nowadays, but I will say it, and I do mean it. If you want to donate crypto, please go ahead. But anyway,
anybody wants to take their Bitcoin off their hands, they're annoyed with it, you just send it over. Sure, yeah, I love it. So shall I start to explain like how the collapse happened?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think I think we've gone. I think we've covered the background enough and the personalities involved. I mean, it is very interesting. But yeah, let's get to the... Well, unless there's something else.
No, I only just realised that an hour has passed already, bloody hell. I better get into it. Yeah, the other thing that foreshadowed this is that there's been a lot of other collapsing things in crypto this year, which may have been a problem. So I don't know if you heard of Terra Luna. That was like a crypto ecosystem with several different tokens.
I heard of it, but I didn't know anything about it.
Yeah, it seemed like such a brilliant idea. I won't go into that because that could take ages, but that was like, it was something created that was worth like tens of billions itself, and that just collapsed again very quickly in in May this year. Astoundingly, just went from like being worth tens of billions to almost nothing within like literally about a day. It was amazing. Alameda Research may have lost money on that. That may have been the trigger for all this. We don't know yet. But that triggered off the collapse of Three Arrows Capital, which was like a $10 billion investment fund. And then also Voyager, which was another crypto platform, that collapsed. And then BlockFi, which was a lending platform, that collapsed. Alameda Research then tried to bail them out, Voyager and BlockFi. And then Celsius collapsed in the summer as well, which was another lending platform run by Alex Mashinsky, another sort of dodgy scammer, it turns out. All these guys, just without telling their users, just taking massive risks in the background. that they just shouldn't have taken. Just terrible risk management, which it turns out, you know, Sam Bankman-Fried has the same problem. By his own admission, he and Caroline Ellison have just both indicated clearly that they just take risks that they shouldn't. They know they're doing it and they still do it.
Is it some kind of compulsion, do you think?
Yeah, it's if you there's like quite a long article I read about SPF earlier, and it's like he actually thinks it's like part of his effective altruism thing. It's like, I need to take big risks to make big money, to give away big money. It's like I can't tell whether he's sincere about that. It's like, how can that compel you to take risks that obviously could destroy you, you know? Like, that doesn't really make sense. Like, so
there's a certain cliche about yuppies, financiers, that basically they're sort of sensation. What's the word? Adrenaline junkies.
Right.
They enjoy taking risks, like, risks that a normal person would be too frightened to take, and that's how normal people don't make loads of fucking money. You know, it's a sort of cliche thing.
Yeah. It's just like, but I mean, if you know that what you're doing is risking the whole, like, everything you've achieved, because, like, this guy has, like, reached a wealth of tens of billions and now he's worth nothing. It's like, why don't you sort of, as you get richer, why don't you take less and less risks? I mean, you don't need to. Obviously, like, yeah, if you're trying to maximize the amount you donate to good causes and or dodgy politicians, then I guess it makes a kind of wacky sense in a way, but
you'd think that as you amassed money, the way I would do this is that I would only ever endanger risk half of my wealth. So that half would continually, exactly. So like that half would continually grow because my wealth is growing, but I would only ever be risking half of it. I mean, sure, that would seem like a common, I mean, you know, maybe it's lame and nonsense, but
no,
it seemed like common sense.
Now that you say that, though, when I think back, like, I've been into sort of crypto investing, and I had some Luna. I had quite a lot of, like, what was worth quite a bit in Luna, and I could have just banked at least, like, 20% of what I'd made. I didn't, and I just lost all of it. And it's like I've done this, you know, the same thing that I'm criticizing here. I did it just like 6 months ago, so it is easy, like, because you just think, oh, well, but I don't want to miss out. I don't want to miss out on the extra profit that I'm going to make. You know, it's like,
yeah.
But that is, and FOMO, exactly. Yeah, fear of missing out. For anyone who's not heard of that, it is the one of the ultimate like killers of any investor or trader. It's like you're constantly thinking about not banking profits and just getting some profit in the bank. You're just thinking about maximizing, and that is a mistake. Maybe that is the story of FTX and Alameda writ large, is that they were just always thinking about maximizing, not about just solid gains. But yeah, like, people who are actually really successful, like, I mean over years and decades at trading and betting as well, spread betting and stuff, they are the ones who do just not think about the maximum gain. They think about, yeah, just bank that, bank that, bank that, bank that, bit, you know, over time. And they do just keep piling up the money. Whereas other people go for the moon, you know, they reach for the moon and they end up flat on their face, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, that's what I did with Luna, yeah. So, so how FTX actually came to collapse, right? This happened just over a very quick period began on the 8th of November. That's when everyone became aware of this. But what preceded that was the relationship between Binance and FTX, right? So even though they're rivals, like, Binance actually was an earlier investor in FTX. I guess the thinking there was that they could just handle the competition and that their equity stake that they bought in the first place would just balloon so much that it would be worth it, even though they would be creating their own competitor. I don't know. I assume that's the thinking. But over time, over the course of, like, last year and this year, they lost all their confidence. I'm talking about Changpeng Zhao, particularly CZ. He lost all his confidence in Sam Bankman-Fried. And he also discovered that SBF appears to have been using his contacts in the media to sort of vilify Binance and to sort of direct attention towards them, like negative attention towards them, to make them seem shady. like, apparently people he knew, like friends of his, have been planting stories in the media. I mean, it's no surprise that SBF's got a lot of media contacts that Changpeng Zhao doesn't have, considering their ethnic background. And that Changpeng Zhao is, like, you know, it's a very Chinese name. He looks very Chinese. He speaks with a Chinese accent. So it's also easy to portray him as potentially an agent of the Chinese government. There was, like, allusions to that, which may be true. I mean, I can't rule that out. But yeah, SPF appears to have been playing dirty games, which is, yeah, no surprise. And lo and behold, various of the federal authorities, including the Department of Justice under Merrick Garland, are investigating Binance for insider trading, for money laundering, and for, like, potentially securities infractions relating to their token, which is BNB. All these things may be true. Binance does have somewhat shady beginnings. Binance was used for, like, pump and dump schemes, I mean, pretty blatantly, which were not illegal because it was outside. Binance managed to locate itself in no particular jurisdiction somehow. So it's amazing. They managed to operate without being under the laws of any particular country. How they get away with that, I don't know, but they're clever. But yeah, they, like, you know, crypto, there was a lot of these ICOs, it was called, initial coin offerings, about 5 years ago. Binance launched just at the right time to benefit from all those. And it was like, yeah, these complete bullshit coins were being launched, pumping up to being worth $1 billion in a day, and then just disappearing. And, like, there is no project, you know, people just disappear and stuff. Binance was just profiting from all that. So their own beginnings are pretty shady, more than shady. So the fact that, like, the authorities in America, especially Merrick Garland, who seems to me an awful, like, Secretary of Justice, just corrupt himself, just using his position for targeting his enemies, basically. The fact that they were investigating Binance, in late October, SPF was, like, goading CZ over that on Twitter, which, like, considering that Binance held loads of FTT token, you'd think was a crazy move. Mm. It's like, what on earth? So this is basically how the collapse happened, right? So on the 2nd of November, CoinDesk, which is one of the main news websites for crypto, had got, I don't know how, this is really interesting, like, how they got this information. They got, like, Alameda's holdings, Alameda Research's holdings. So SBF was not the chief exec of Alameda by this point. He's focused on FTX, but he's still by far the main owner of Alameda. So it's still his company. And they just reported on Alameda's holdings. It showed that, like, a majority of its value was in FTT. Now, that is no good. That's madness. Like, that token is just nowhere near reliable for it to be, like, the majority of the value of your fund. That's, like, what are you doing? Lo and behold, that obviously triggered off a lot of concern. A lot of people started pulling their funds off of FTX. Nobody's invested in Alameda, but, like, those people are effectively exposed to FTX because they've got funds on there. You know, they've made themselves $100,000 and it's still on there. People started withdrawing. Also, a lot of Alameda's other holdings were in just other crypto tokens that are just, like, some of them I've never even heard of, like Serum and stuff. Like, I mean, apparently that was quite a big deal, but, like, these things are really, really illiquid. Like, I mean, if you realize that you need to say you've got $5 billion of FTT and you need to start liquidating that, the moment you start selling even, like, 1% of that, the market becomes aware that there's just this huge amount of offers coming onto the trading book, right? So it's just a huge amount of selling. That is going to drive it down. Suddenly, it's not worth $5 billion anymore. It's like, there's not really any bottom to how much it's worth, you know? It's like, do you see what I mean there? Like,
yes, I do, because it creates this sense of uncertainty.
Yeah, these values cannot actually be realized. You can't actually sell $5 billion of it. Once you start selling it, it's like, no, it's actually worth four. Now it's worth three. It's like, there's a panic, you know, there's a run on it because it's like, well, if the main holders of it are selling it, why would anybody want to hold it anymore? So you can say it's worth $5 billion, but there's no way to actually get $5 billion for it. So that was never a good idea. So on the 6th of November, 4 days after that article, CZ, Binance's founder and owner, he announces that he is selling all his FTT. I don't know how much he had, but it's probably hundreds of millions of dollars worth. He also, right, he said his tweets really, really stuck the knife in. It was quite amazing to watch because SBF was a very rich man, right? He was a whale by any measure. People, you know, that's a term people use. But
and looks like a whale.
He looks like, yeah. A crap one as well, not a blue whale, right? CZ, have you seen the picture of CZ, by the way? He's not a good-looking guy either.
No.
Have a look at some point.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, he's like a blue whale. I mean, he's one of the richest people in the world. Well, apparently now he's worth about $17 billion. But when crypto was riding high about a year ago, he was worth potentially like $60 billion. Some people say he's worth more. Some people say they don't even know how wealthy he is. But yeah, he's a bigger fish than SPF. He tweeted this. He said, "We won't support people who lobby against other industry players behind their backs." So that was alluding to SBF's machinations in the media. And that is a really, like, severe statement. That's saying you're not just making bad decisions, you're a bad character. That is telling people, get away from this geezer. You can't trust this guy. So that was a declaration of war, right? From that point, pretty much as soon as he said he was selling his stuff and he just attacked SBF's character, there's just a cascade of withdrawals off of FTX. Within 2 days, by the 8th of November, FTX has got like a serious crisis, right? It's like, you know, like whatever we say, our assets. Well, this is the thing. Everyone should be able to withdraw their stuff. There shouldn't be a problem. And yet they can't, right? So on... I won't jump ahead. On that day, the 8th of November, Binance announced, amazingly, that they were looking into buying FTX to rescue it. So FTX is in major problem by this point. We'll come back to why everyone wasn't able to withdraw their money. I mean, they should have been able to. The money should have been there. You know, like, it's your funds. Like, it's, you know, like, there shouldn't be any question over that. But the following day, this was the boot in the face, right? Binance then said, we're not buying it. So those crucial 24 hours were wasted, right? That is a time in which FTX could have found a rescuer, maybe, if anyone was prepared to stump up enough. But Binance effectively wasted that time for them by saying, we're going to buy you out, and then didn't. So I remember hearing about that and laughing. I was like, wow, this guy CZ is actually, he's quite... ruthless,
yeah.
I mean, he's obviously decided at this point that he's like prepared to destroy them. On that day, FTX then stops all withdrawals. Now that is, you're dead. That's it. It's over. Like, if people can't withdraw their stuff, that means the money's not there. And then we're looking at, I mean, you've got to suspect crime at that point. And the following day, 10th of November, Alameda Research closed forever. It's gone from being like this huge success to like within a week, it's closed. Amazing, amazing stuff. Like SBF was like the big shot. It's like now he's just a joke. On the 11th of November, he steps down from his position at FTX, and FTX and Alameda file for bankruptcy. So it's now out of his hands. It goes into the hands of a new CEO. It's called John Ray, a guy who dealt with the bankruptcy of Enron 20 years ago. And obviously a bankruptcy procedure, things are out of your hands at that point. They're in the hands of like lawyers and courts and stuff. And the lawyers, this has been pointed out, this didn't occur to me, but other people have pointed this out, that the lawyers have an interest in it going badly because they want to just make the most money from, like, they want the procedure to last for years. They want it to be complicated because that's the way they make the most fees, right? So once it's in the hands of the lawyers, you're potentially, it's even going to get even worse for you. And I think that's what's going to happen. I think like he didn't want to do that. He was talked into that on that day. He's probably in a panic. And he realized afterwards that like that actually makes things worse for him. But it gets worse, right? Later that day, so he stepped down the same day they filed for bankruptcy. That evening, nearly $500 million in funds and maybe up to $2 billion was stolen from FTX, and nobody knows what happened there. So, I mean, if you're looking for some sort of like fraud slush fund, maybe some angle with the Democrats, I don't know, like, you want to look into that. Or that's just embezzlement on his part, or it's someone else just opportunistically who's got access to the funds, embezzling what they can and maybe disappearing for the rest of their life. I don't know. But like a huge amount of money was stolen that night and no one knows where it's gone. It's incredible.
Like this two, how much? $2 billion?
Between $500 million and $2 billion. Yeah. And this, and like these things are all happening on the blockchain, right? You can see it happening. So it's like people are just watching this already distressed fund being robbed of a huge amount of its remaining value. And yeah, nobody knows to this day what's happened there. Like, I'd love to know, but yeah. So the following day, 12th of November, the Wall Street Journal reports that Caroline Ellison, as I said earlier, she has confirmed that all the top executives, including SBF, knew about, and this is criminal, FTX lending user funds to Alameda. So Alameda had made a bunch of losses, and FTX, which is supposed to be a completely separate company, lends its users' funds, who obviously trusted the company, to Alameda to help it try and make its money back. Alameda failed to make its money back anyway. By the way, the losses that Alameda was trying to make up for may have been to do with Terra Luna. Indeed, they may have been the ones who caused Terra Luna to collapse. They may have done some jiggery pokery that they thought was going to make them money but not collapse Luna, but actually it collapsed it. I think that is a plausible theory. So these things are actually closely related as well.
So it's like they took a risk, and one of many, many risks that they'd taken, and this one didn't pay off, really.
Yeah, and then they were in trouble actually from May, it looks like. Yeah. So Alameda had a hole of, well, some people say between $4 and $10 billion, or at least that's the amount that FTX lent to Alameda. And it's like, you can't do that. That is like completely fraudulent, just blatantly fraudulent. And this is one of the things he's being charged with now. That is explicitly in violation of their own terms of service. FTX's terms of service said, we will never do that. So they defrauded their own users, like blatantly. So yeah, on the 14th of November, the New York Times reported the same thing. So that seems to be true. They're like credible. You know, they don't report... I shouldn't say they don't report outright lies. They would in other ways, but I don't think they're lying about that. I mean, yeah, Caroline Ellison has confirmed what is fraud. So, yeah, and then on the 17th of November, this new CEO, John Ray, I think it's called John Ray, yeah, he said that, gets worse, like Alameda had also lent $1 billion to Sam Bankman-Fried and $500 million to another executive, and that happened in September before the collapse. It's like, has that been paid back?
What the hell?
Right, $1 billion loan. So what? And it's, yeah, that's outstanding as far as I know. That loan is just, that's effectively a gift.
Right.
I don't know in what form, like that was that FTT token or was that in dollars? I don't know. I don't know whether he's still got that somewhere. But yeah, all these things are just outstanding. Like no one has an answer for these things yet. So that's the collapse, right? What a dramatic, sort of 2 weeks that was.
Yeah.
But most of it happening within like sort of 36 hours. So this is, you know, if for any crypto follower, we've seen dramatic stuff this year, and this is one of them. The Terra Luna thing was major drama as well. The Celsius thing was big drama. And also just the massive collapse in crypto values over the last year. It's been obviously a black year for crypto. Unless, of course, you're someone who already had loads of cash and were willing to buy, in which case this is great.
Yes, so, indeed. It is buy the dip.
Yeah, so this is a massive dip.
Yeah, indeed. So, I mean, I guess that 2 week period, I mean, that would probably be a massive, it would be terrifying and stressful for Sam Bankman-Fried. But at the same time, he is a guy who has prided himself on taking risks, probably enjoyed it, enjoyed the adrenaline and all that. But then at this point, there are too many fuck-ups sort of stored up waiting to detonate. And there's a cascade effect and one thing after another goes wrong.
Yeah, yeah. And remember at the start that he's goading his main rival over like well, yeah, he's goading him about the feds coming after him. Like, even though his rival has the power to potentially destroy him, and in fact, that is what happened.
See, that would seem to match what I just said. That, yeah. Like, why don't I goad my main rival who has a lot of power to fuck me up?
Yeah, it's good. Okay, but like, here's another thing that lends to the conspiracy angle is that, like, SBF doesn't seem to have been particularly stressed by this. He just seems calm. Like, his answers are crap. Like, you know, he's evasive, but he seems very, like, casual and arrogant. Even, like, just a few days ago, before he was arrested, he was on, and this has happened several times, he's been on Twitter Spaces. You know, like, I haven't used this, but it's like live streaming on Twitter, right?
This is something that's emerged since I was last on Twitter, right? I hear people talking about this. I don't know what it is.
It might be what Periscope was for a while. Maybe it evolved into Twitter Spaces.
Right.
But sometimes you have Elon Musk on them and stuff, and they're discussing quite important stuff. But SBF's been on them. It's an evolution of Twitter, I guess. But SBF was on one just like a few days ago. And he was answering all these questions, like most of his answers just completely unsatisfactory and evasive, and he's good at, you know, word salad and stuff. But he was like sitting there playing computer games while he's doing it. Like, he's playing League of Legends or Magic the Gathering and stuff. And he says this as well on the stream. He's like, oh yeah, sorry, I'm playing a game at the same time. Well, he doesn't say sorry. But like, he makes a show of arrogance. Like, that's
It could also be showing off, you know. Like, I'm a big shot, and I care so little. I'm so cool that I'm playing a computer game at the same time.
Yeah, but you know, like, this is after obviously the world has come to see you as like a potential.
In that case, it would seem more like. I mean, what would you attribute that? It could be just sheer autism, or it could be a delusion that he's taking solace in a video game. I don't know.
Yeah, I really don't know. Maybe it's a Jewish thing. I don't know. Like, I mean, in some areas of life, you see Jews who, given their situation, you think they should be freaking out, but they find that either putting on a show of arrogance or actually being arrogant, like, kind of carries them through a lot of situations. I don't know. But in this case, it hasn't carried him through. He's now in the slammer. He's in a horrible jail in the Bahamas at the moment until he gets extradited.
Yes, indeed. That was what we were going to get to. Is there anything that we should say before we get to that?
Well, I'm just looking at my notes, like, about why this is criminal. I mean, I have covered the fact that, yeah, it's, like, fraudulent. He was using people's funds, just blatantly, fraudulently using them for other purposes. So that is criminal. The things he's been charged with since he was arrested are wire fraud, securities fraud.
But before we get to that, let's just talk about that period, which I guess is about a month, during which time he wasn't arrested. And people were wondering, and you know, especially in our spheres, for obvious reasons, people were saying he's going to get away with it. They're just going to sweep this under the rug, because that's what it looked like. There were apparently no calls for him to be arrested.
Yeah, and there was very favourable media treatment as well, right? So there was a distinct split, actually. As soon as, right, so I follow a lot of the alt media, you could say, like the crypto YouTubers, and they were. They took the correct line on this. Like, this guy is a fucking scammer. We know it. Like, we know what he's done wrong. Like, and the mainstream media were really soft on him. I mean, not to the point where they were denying everything. They weren't saying that he's like no fault at all, but they were really friendly. And of course, the New York Times had him on a panel discussion just last week. And it was like they were putting a few tough questions to him, but it was pretty nice at the same time, considering he's just lost people tens of billions of dollars. And it is clearly fraudulent what he did. Like, yeah, I mean, it was remarkably favourable, but, I mean, that has to come to an end now. I mean, they can't maintain that now. But, yeah, I mean, yeah, he was...
There was a period where it was as if things were sort of happening in not even slow motion. It was as if things had just stopped and like nothing's going to happen here. No one's going to do anything. And indeed, I remember seeing this meme doing the rounds, and I'll just I'll put it up on screen now, which is rather amusing. Here it is. This is about the New York Times events. And this was on the 30th of November.
So that was on the 30th, was it? Yeah, okay, so I think there's been another one as well. He was on something called Deal Book. I don't know if it was the same thing. I think it was a bit more recent. But the answers he was giving for why... I mean, if he was being interviewed by someone who knew all the ins and outs, his answers would not have stood up. But he was being interviewed by a fairly standard journalist. I think it was Andrew Sorkin or Aaron Sorkin or something.
Oh,
excuse me, I'm getting a bit hoarse here. Sorry, I just need to clear my throat.
Well, what was I going to say?
Mate, I've had a cough and I'm losing my voice.
Oh, no, it's okay. For the first couple of nights of Millennial, I was getting over something. So it was, I think everyone's a bit ill just now. It seems to be going around. So don't worry about it. But yeah, so there was that weird moment for a lot, well, not a moment, like a month, where it seemed like he was just going to get away with it. Some people were saying that they were the feds and whatever were probably gathering evidence during that time, and they didn't want to alert him so that he would get suspicious and flee or whatever. I'm not sure about that.
Well, I mean, that may be good practice on the part of prosecutors, right? It may be the case that you don't say anything until you've got all the charges prepared, and then you just announce it all in one go. I mean, that is what they've done at least, but. Yeah, I mean, when obviously you first asked me to come on and explain this a few weeks ago, right, I thought until the other day that what I was going to be doing was talking about why he hasn't been arrested. You know, I thought that
exactly.
Was
going to be the story. And so did I. Mm.
Yeah, yeah.
I think we were both surprised when he got arrested.
Yeah, it's and it obviously threw me out. It's like I thought I was going to be talking about conspiracy theories, basically, and it's like actually, all right. So the wheels of justice do seem to be turning. However, he was arrested the day before, a matter of like less than 24 hours before he was due to be interviewed by the House of Representatives Financial Services Committee, at which obviously he may have been pressed by House representatives who weren't in on the plan. If there was a plan, you know, if there was any sort of conspiracy, he might have been asked questions that would reveal things that can't be revealed. You know, I don't know what about, but I mean, the arrest forestalled that appearance, so it may actually be convenient. I mean,
right,
for people who are looking for a conspiracy angle on this, I mean, right, he is now being charged by three different authorities at least, which is the Southern District of New York, Securities and Exchange Commission, and the Commodities Future Trading Commission, with serious charges that add up to potentially over 100 years in prison. And I'd note especially the Southern District of New York, they have a 99% plus conviction rate because they get to choose their own cases. So they, you know, being charged by him is not a death sentence, but a prison sentence, like almost a guaranteed prison sentence, right? Mm. That is how it's looking for him. What was my point with that? Why did I say that? God damn, my hungover brain's running down. It's obviously not looking good for him. However, on the other hand, let's say Joseph Biden leaves office in 2 years, he could pardon him. If they can get him convicted before that, he could then be pardoned, right?
Right.
I mean, it does happen. I don't know. I mean, his arrogance all along suggests that maybe he has been told he'll get a pardon. I don't know.
God, this is like Hillary Clinton levels of Machiavellian.
Yeah.
I don't need to worry because I know I'm going to get away with it because I'm me. And yeah, it's just like Skeletor kind of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, she appeared to never have anything to fear, did she? Like the, you know, like pardons do look terrible. Like every time, like every president who leaves office, they pardon a bunch of scumbags, and it nothing comes of it. It's just, well, that is constitutional. It is allowed. So Biden may well do that. I mean, I don't know whether Biden's going to run again. I don't know, but I mean, if he doesn't, that could be SBF's ticket out of jail, you know? I mean, we don't know.
Quid est Veritas, who has been on my channel for a long time, I remember him on YouTube, says, although SBF is a billionaire and ingratiates himself with the powers that be, I don't think they consider him one of their own. I think they are quite willing to throw him under the bus.
I think so, although obviously they're losing a lot of money by doing so because he was such a generous donor. So they're losing some things. Obviously, this will look bad. All the people he funded, you know, it's well, you know, like Maxine Waters blowing a kiss to him, that looks bad, you know. But yeah, at the same time, I mean, this is what I don't know. Did I say at the start? I mean, there's different power factions in the world. I mean, there's a guy I listen to, Pete Quinones. I'll tell you about him. He's a friend of his called Tom Luongo. He'd be a good guest for Millennial, I think, next year maybe. Okay. But he says that like there's different power factions in the world, and the World Economic Forum, the Davos faction, is one of them. But they're actually on the back foot. If he's right about that, SBF was probably part of the Davos faction. It's the kind of left-leaning kind of, you know, putting, like, actually deliberately impoverishing much of the world to save the environment and to save the poor and stuff. Like, the Davos agenda, the ESG agenda, the Larry Fink BlackRock agenda, they're all part of one faction. And the traditional finance, like people like JP Morgan or Jamie Dimon of JP Morgan, are actually another faction who are kind of at war with them to some extent. So, I mean, I don't know whether this is right. I mean, I don't know where Jews fit into this. I don't know where the Anti-Defamation League fits into this. I don't know where, you know, various people fit into it. So I don't know whether that's right. But it could be that, you know, he's been told that he can get away with this. And then it turns out, yeah, the guys who told him that are not actually in charge. Like, you know, could be something like that, you know. There's all these different permutations.
Well, it's a similar thing with Epstein, isn't it? You know, why did they put him on trial? Why did they kill him? I believe.
Sorry, you said he didn't commit suicide.
Oh, sorry.
Shit.
How do I reverse out of that one?
I think you're right. I actually suspect that he was murdered.
I think it looks likely. that's the thing, isn't it? Why did they do that?
You know, we talk about the powers that be, but there's probably several powers that be, aren't there?
I think so, and that dictates how much one power can get away with. If Epstein's people were the only ones in power, then probably, perhaps, he would have got away with it. He would have been fine to get away with it. But there are multiple powers, multiple factions within the elite echelon, so they can make sure that he, like, they can make a big fuss about it, so that he has to be sacrificed. I don't know. I'm just speculating.
Yeah, I mean, maybe he was just told, look, you'll be all right. We've got your back. Like, you'll be out in the Bahamas. We'll make sure you're not extradited or something like this. And, you know, like, it'll be fine. And then they just betrayed him. Or they told him it'll be fine, and then the people who told him that have been shoved aside and they haven't got the power to save him. Or maybe this is a Republican-Democrat thing. Maybe Republicans wanted to destroy him because he was so good for the Democrats. Or maybe he really just genuinely fucked up. It's really hard to know. And I'm sorry that I can't come on here with a more solid theory. You know, I'd love to have the killer theory, but I just... The parts are all still moving, you know? He's charged with very serious things. It's wire fraud, it's securities fraud, it's commodities fraud, it's money laundering, it's violating campaign finance laws, and it's also conspiracy to commit all these things. And these are serious things. You can go down for many years, and he's going to do serious time, it looks like, unless he's pardoned.
So, yes. One person asked the question, was US taxpayer money laundered to, I've forgotten the exact wording, laundered to Ukraine through FTX?
Not that I've found. No, the Ukraine connection, as far as I know, is what I said earlier, is that just legitimate charitable donations, you know, to support, well, Slava Ukraina, you know, all that crap. It's that sort of money which he was just legitimately delivering to Ukraine. Well, as legitimate as anything involved with Ukraine can be. As far as I know, no. But, you know, I'd love to know more.
Yeah. Okay, well, we'll go through the super chats then. Okay, Black Pigeon Pilled says,
just before we come to that, I would just say, like, as I say, the big, like, one big glaring thing is he was arrested just before he was supposed to be part of hearings before the House Committee on Financial Services. So, I mean, you know, like, God knows what that would have thrown up, you know, and we'll never know now.
Right. Okay. Please, Black Pigeon Pill says, please ask Horace to do an impression from Ayatollah's FND dealer's choice. Base dungarees, always a laugh. FND dealer's choice.
Like FND dealer's choice. I'm sorry, I have no idea what that means.
Okay.
I'd love to. There was one impression I did on Toller's show. It was of History Debunked. I was doing this cracking voice.
Oh, yes, I remember that. Yeah,
to do that. but yeah. Sorry, I can't comply.
Okay. He also asks, Horace, did you get involved in the crypto craze at any point? Did you sell Shitecoin and regretted selling it when it mooned? The brother and I bought GMT at peak.
I don't know what GMT is. Is Shitecoin the name of an actual coin? It probably is. I mean, there used to be a big boobs coin. That was a real thing. So.
I think he's using it as a generic umbrella term for the minor coins that pop up now and then.
I held loads of Luna and then one day I woke up and it was all worth nothing. So the answer to that is yes. Luna looked great and turned out to be a piece of crap. And others as well. Yeah, I bought loads of... I got caught up in the mania last year and basically frittered away loads of money. But I did learn a lesson from it, and I didn't do too badly. I got out fairly early, you know, so I made some losses, but it's not too bad. If we're coming to the end of the stream, there's one other thing I want to mention before we end, so I just thought I should say that.
Yeah, I was just going to do the super chats, and then we could do conclusion sort of stuff.
Cool, yeah.
That's fine. Okay. And One-Eyed Fat Man says, this last week has seen a substantial step towards nuclear fusion, where they were able to create more energy than they put in using the technology for the first time. If large-scale nuclear fusion becomes a reality, what does that mean for crypto or even energy as a whole, especially in the EU? Do you know anything about nuclear fusion?
I've been hearing all my adult life that they're about to make the crucial breakthrough. Nuclear fusion, if it is actually achieved, will be transformative of the whole world. Like, that'd be amazing. If you think about the problems that humanity has due to this scarcity of energy, and those problems largely going away, we could be in a new era of plenty. But at the same time, is it really happening? I don't know. So the person asking that, if that's true, then that's brilliant. That's amazing. As it relates to Bitcoin, I mean, Bitcoin mining, which is an essential part of the Bitcoin network, you can't just get rid of that. That consumes something like it's more than half of 1% of all the world's energy usage, and it's growing. It's a major thing, and it's used by people who are against Bitcoin to say it's dirty, it's a massive waste of energy and stuff. It's actually not a waste because it's essential to how it works. But yeah, if nuclear fusion comes about, then you would think that complaint against Bitcoin goes away, the environmental complaint. So yeah,
certainly. Okay, Vingul asks, why is Horace a libertarian? He seems like an upstanding fellow.
Philosophically, I started reading Mises and especially Murray Rothbard about, 2005-ish, and I was won over by their arguments. I think their arguments were good. It's not so much like, let's all, you know, do whatever we want, regardless of the consequences. Not that at all. I'm against that. It's an opposition to the state. I became persuaded that the state is not our friend, is not our representative, is not our protector at all. It's a parasite and an enemy and a corrupter, and it's essentially should be seen as like an organized crime operation. I understand that you know, we could debate this, or we should. You and I should debate this at some point. But yeah, I think the state is not our friend. It's not our friend at all, and it's natural once you begin to see it in that way to have an oppositional attitude towards it. So it's not about libertinism. It's not about, you know, it's not about indulgence, regardless of consequences. It's about just how I see the state. That's what it means to me. And also that I came to value the thing that the state most corrupts, which is private property and just individual freedom. But yeah, again, I don't mean freedom so that I can, you know, like, just be a degenerate. It's not about that. It's like, it's who the fuck are these people telling me what to do, what not to do?
Honestly, I'm coming round to that, back to that way of thinking after COVID.
Right.
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, real change can only come through the state, through using state power.
Yep.
You know, that would be a necessary evil, I guess. But ultimately,
I don't trust
the state.
Yeah, sorry, I didn't mean to talk over you. Yeah, I do want to take over the state. I do believe that it's necessary. I'm not into this thing of just, let's sort of just act as if it doesn't exist. No, we need to take over power and use it against our enemies. Like, it's that or they destroy us. Like, we have to.
Yeah, so, yeah, I agree. Okay, Darby says, remember to like and share the stream. Thank you for that, Darby. Chain Reaction says, just because everyone has a buck and he donates a buck. Thank you very much. Hinchfoot, thank you, no message. Darby says, if I was a betting man, I'd put money on Bankman getting pardoned. Wasn't he just named the biggest donor in US history after the midterms?
Yeah. He's got a good chance. You'd think he's got a good chance of getting pardoned, wouldn't you? Filthy as that will be, you know, as much of a slap in the face of the public as that will be, it may well happen.
Yeah, it may well. I mean, somebody said Biden, or was it Trump, pardoned some guy who was on an 800-year sentence. I don't know who that was. Okay, and Judy says, why did you name yourself after the War Master?
I named myself after the Egyptian god Horus. I get questions about... most of the questions I get about my name are like, why have you chosen this satanic name? I was like, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to. Didn't think it was satanic, but I used to have a computer game called Eye of Horus, which was a poor game, but it just, you know, it was the first exposure I had to like Egyptian mythology and gods and stuff, and I just thought it was really cool. I just liked the symbol, so I just chose that when I first started doing YouTube. But I also do love the Horus Heresy stories. It's just a coincidence, though. I sometimes use the name War Master Horus. It's just because, like, sometimes when I first went on Telegram, Horus was already taken. So,
yeah. I thought that might be it. Let's get back to conclusionary thoughts about the FTX scandal. What were you going to say before I interrupted you?
I interrupted you. There's among certain politicians, especially Elizabeth Warren, who's obviously quite left wing by American standards. There's like a regulate crypto agenda, you know, and like in her case, she proposes ridiculous things. Like even people who've just got like a private Bitcoin wallet that's not even like done through a computer or anything. She's saying we need to have regulation of that and like know your customer, like, you know, proof of ID stuff, just even if you've got your own like cold wallet and stuff. It's just bonkers. She doesn't know what she's talking about. But like people like her are massively empowered by this. Like the Luna collapse was the same thing. It was like, this is just going to increase the case for regulation. What I've also noticed in the last few days is that Kevin O'Leary, who is a guy who's worth about $400 million, according to Google, and he's on Shark Tank, which is Dragon's Den in America. He was paid about $15 million. I don't know if he ever actually got all that or he was due to be paid in installments or what, but to be a celebrity spokesperson for FTX, as was Larry David, was on their adverts. Tom Brady, the American football player, Shaquille O'Neal, the basketball player, several other sportsmen, Giselle Bundchen, the Tom Brady's wife, I think they're getting divorced now, but one of the most beautiful women I've ever seen, absolutely stunningly gorgeous woman from Brazil, although she's got a sort of German name. But she, all these people were like celebrity endorsers of FTX. They're all, they've all got egg on their faces now. They're all being sued as well. There's like cases against FTX that are drawing them into it. Like Larry David is getting sued over this, which is quite funny.
That's bizarre.
Yeah.
Just because he endorsed it.
Yeah, have you got a soundboard with the Curb Your Enthusiasm music? You could have just kicked that in there, like when I said that.
You know, that music actually wasn't composed by a Jew. It was it's actually Italian. I looked it up. I think I'm right in saying that.
Is it a zither or a mandolin or something? Is it?
I think it might well be a mandolin. But anyway,
that's playing whenever I think of Larry David receiving a court summons or something. but yeah, this guy Kevin O'Leary is like he's among the celebrity spokespersons for FTX. But he I don't know why, because he's so goddamn rich. I don't know why he's taking money to like speak for other companies, but he was. And he is like kind of an attack dog. He's really going after Biden. So he did appear in front of the House of Representatives the other day, and he used it as an opportunity to just try and direct all the fire at Binance. He's just said, he said basically, what I've just seen here is Binance taking down a rival firm. Binance is like unregulated as well compared to FTX and compared to most. He's saying, like, what I've just seen is the unregulated biggest exchange in the world take down its nearest rival and establish itself as a monopoly. Now, it's not true. It's not a monopoly at all. It's just number one. It's not a monopoly. There's loads of competition. But it is unregulated, and it has just destroyed, like CZ definitely did have a role in sticking the knife in verbally and, you know, maybe in other ways. In taking down his next biggest rival. So, I mean, it's partly true, but Kevin O'Leary is a prick, right? The Kevin O'Leary loves all this regular. Kevin O'Leary is just like SBF in that he got into the crypto thing for all the most mercenary reasons, in that it's the fast way to make money, right? He does not share the ethos of Bitcoin. He wants everything to be government controlled, like government overseen and stuff. He wants all regulation and stuff. And so these are the benefit, like in a way, I mean, he's lost money, his reputation suffered, but the regulation cause is the great beneficiary of all this. So you could say that SBF was sent in to set up this massive exchange and then ruin it. I don't think the evidence bears that out. I think he's actually made genuine mistakes. But it could be the case that he was sent in as a deliberate fall guy and he's been promised a pardon. You know, this is a plausible theory. He's been promised a pardon and he's going to walk away with probably not, you know, 25 billion, but he's going to walk away wealthy. Somehow, you know, that loan, that billion-dollar loan that he got, that's just,
yeah,
you know, like maybe that is there waiting for him when he gets pardoned in a couple of years or something. So, you know, and all this serves as a pretext for the state, you know, to clamp down on crypto. That said, do they even need a pretext? I mean, you know, like,
well, every little helps, right? I mean, they probably don't need a pretext, but they'd be better with one than without one.
It helps, yeah. So yeah, that's about all that I had to say on it. I'm sorry that I can't be more conclusive in what I say, but this is a story that is like it's unfolding as we speak. I recommend people keep an eye on it. I think it's really, really interesting, and it may relate to the Democrat. There may be some sort of slush fund thing. There may be all sorts of fraud and embezzlement that we're going to still hear about. That, you know, not just trading fraud. There could be all sorts of connections with Ukraine, with organized crime. God knows, man. That may emerge. I don't find any evidence for that.
In a way, the more interesting story is that if there is no connection really with the Democrat Party, because then it's just a guy, it's entirely springing from his own psychology. It's like he didn't do this for the Dems or whatever. He did this because he is this person. He did it because for the sensation, for the adrenaline. He did it to prove how clever he is. He took risks because he wanted to see if he was clever enough to outthink the odds.
And then
it all blew up in the end.
Yeah, yeah, he may really have done all this in the pursuit of effective altruism. He really might have. That's not ridiculous at all. He really may have just been so possessed by that idea, and he's got that kind of wacky single-mindedness.
Exactly. It's that weird story where someone fucks themselves up for actually benign reasons.
possibly. On the other hand, he's definitely a liar. He's definitely a fraudster. He's definitely an arrogant bastard. He's definitely, you know, all these things to dislike about him. So, you know, he's definitely a bad character in all sorts of ways. And he's definitely lost a load of decent people loads of money. And, you know, well, maybe not decent people, but he's lost loads of people loads of money. So, you know, it's a mixed thing. It's a complicated thing. I could believe that it's actually an Ernest mistake in a way, but he is a criminal and he should go to prison. And what we're going to see, you know, over the coming years of is what else there was to it. What I would say as well is, for anyone who wants there to be a conspiracy angle, well, there is, because, I mean, he's donated loads of money to Joe Biden, who is an organized criminal. I mean, Joe Biden is a goddamn gangster. Like, he's a piece of dirt. So, I mean, you've got a dirty angle there already.
I think you're being a bit judgmental there, to be honest. Just kidding.
I mean, the more I find out about Biden, it's not just his politics. He's a fucking filthy criminal.
Oh, he's absolutely awful. I mean, it's we could go on about that all night. It's incredible. But, yeah.
Awful, man. Awful. Dreadful.
Yeah. Completely corrupt. Yeah.
And his son. I mean, that's not even to speak of his son as well, you know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. Well, that's a whole other thing. But I want to end with I'll put a question to you that is based on something that was said in the chat. On the matter of crypto, would you rather have, let's say, a tenth of a million in Bitcoin or a million in dollars?
Well, right now, I'd take the dollars and then I'd put at least a tenth of it into Bitcoin and maybe some more, but, you know, I'd rather have the dollars, right?
Yeah, I guess that's a stupid question. Let me put it another way then. A million in Bitcoin or a million in fiat?
I'd take the Bitcoin. I think Bitcoin is at a sort of cycle, is at a fairly low price at the moment. I think it's going to, I mean, it may go down more, but I think it's going to do well. What you could have asked me is, you take, you know, the original question, but you can't exchange. In which case, you know, it's what's going to survive over the long term. That's what you'd be asking there, right?
Yes.
In which case, I'd say the Bitcoin. I do think it's got better long-term prospects than the dollar. I do think that the dollar is going to... We're going to go into hyperinflation probably this decade, I think, or terrible. Well, we're already in very bad inflation. Mm. And it's going to get worse. I do think it's going to get worse. Because what's going to happen... I know we're coming to the end of, you know, you've got another guest soon, so I'll try and be quick. But what I'll do is I'll just direct people to Carl Thorburn's channel on Telegram. He posted something that I just thought was very, like, worth repeating. Just look over his posts of the last day or two, and he made a very good point about the Fed is going to... So that, you know, the Federal Reserve has been tightening its interest rate policy very, very sharply this year, which draws money out of the system and essentially make certain a recession. Carl Thorburn showed, you've had him on Millennial before, haven't you, I think, or have you?
So
he does a really good channel. He explained why they're going to have to reverse that policy in the coming months. And he put it better than I can. So I just recommend everyone look at his posts over the last couple of days and you'll see what he's talking about. But yeah, they're probably going to start creating trillions and trillions of dollars again, and inflation is going to get even worse. And Britain will do the same, and the euro will do the same, and we're going to see mayhem this decade. And it's, well, you know, it's going to be bad. It's going to be really bad. And I think Bitcoin will survive that. I don't see how, unless there's some way they can destroy Bitcoin, Bitcoin's going to come out well from that. It's going to go into huge valuations compared to the fiat currencies. I think
that's what I suspect as well, because it's going to be a reliable source of, as I said, that you can't really devalue it. You cannot produce any more Bitcoin. So as long as they don't fuck around with it.
If there's a way to destroy it somehow, like, then that all goes out the window. But I don't see what that way is. So I think the prospects are good for Bitcoin and poor for the dollar.
I would agree. All right, then. Well, that's been a very interesting episode, and I hope that it's been useful for people in helping to explain this thing that's happened and that's ongoing. So, Horace, thank you very much for putting in the time and research to do this. I appreciate it.
It's been really, really interesting. I've enjoyed it, and I love coming on Millennial. It's great. I think I said to you last time, when I first started making videos, it was my ambition to be on Millennial. So I really enjoyed it.
Well, that's very nice of you to say that, and as I say I'm really glad that we were able to do this stream this year. Okay, I'll be back in a few minutes, maybe 10 minutes, with Gio from Giant Art Productions, but in the meantime, Horace, thank you for taking part in Millennial 8.
Thank you.
Okay, the rest of you, I will see you soon. Bye-bye for now.
We hope you're enjoying Millennial. The show must go on, but it needs your help. Bitcoin, Ethereum, Monero, and other cryptocurrencies are all very welcome. Get the info you need at millennial.com/crypto and make your donation today. Millennial amounts to 3 months of work for the vile blogger. Please help him continue. Until next time, enjoy the show and spread the word.